Welcome to Bagel Tech Big, the weekly show from the Bagel Tech Network, where we look at all the things that have gone on that are technology in the week, and we get all excited about stuff at shows and that kind of stuff, because it's Macworld this week, so we'll be having a big chat from there. Hopefully Don McAllister is going to be here tomorrow reporting in live, and so's Chris Forsman, so it should be good. But to discuss the general week in tech, non-Mac related, we've got the usual fantastic panel back with us, with a note from his mum. Heart attack boy. Thanks for only scaring us, mate.
I have to say that was probably the most incoherent introduction to a show I've heard since Bagel Tech Nonsense last week.
I could start again if you want.
Thank you.
Stop it. So
good evening, Ewan.
So you're fit, well, and rosy and shiny.
Absolutely. I did some science when I was in hospital to find out whether or not caffeine makes any difference to an ECG machine, because one of my mates snuck some in because hospital coffee is awful, and it doesn't. Clean bill of health. So I've had some coffee before the show, and I'm Eric Lanigan pumped this evening, I tell you.
And
that sounds wrong.
You're nursed up.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
You were a horny toad, boy. I saw some of those tweets.
Yeah.
Plus de change.
Oh, I've got terrible pain in my chest. Maybe you could rub it.
Pain's near the inner thigh.
No, harder.
You're going to get me into trouble. If my wife
Boom,
hears this...
Boom, chicka, wow, wow.
Giggity, giggity.
Based on actual events.
You mean she doesn't follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, she's all too well aware.
Yeah, she's got you peg, mate.
Pretty much.
Good lad. You're well now, though.
Very well indeed. Thank you very much. It's been a busy week, and I'm glad it's nearly at the end.
Joining us from up north, Ian Grant, freshly recovered from his last trip to the Rother Arms.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes,
I'm well, sir.
It's a month to get a steak out of you from there.
Oh, yeah, definitely, sir, definitely. You're back up soon. We'll have to have another one, mate.
Two dead cows. I've got nothing booked for York at the minute. When I am, though, that's the only place I'm going to go. Stuff the work. I'm just going to sit in the Rother Arms and eat steak all day. Well?
I'm very well, sir. Very well.
Excellent.
Busy. Spent a week throwing out blackberries, ironically enough.
Throwing out blackberries? No, I'm taking this is not in a hedge.
No. As in sending them off to various people around the country and then getting confused phone calls when they're trying to get them set up. But never mind.
Right. Okay. Two new CEOs made a difference to you or not?
Hopefully. Lazaridis is now out of the picture. I hope it's going to get better. I do. As you guys were saying the other week, I heard on the show, you were sort of sticking up for my point of view that the business side of things, they've still got their all their cards firmly sorted. It's just really, they shouldn't mess about with this bloody consumer side of things. Just let the Apple fight that with Microsoft and everybody else.
Well, they've buggered off, so we'll have a chat about that in a minute, definitely, because it's one of the main stories of the week. Beneath him, Miss Sarah Gray, who's been doing Microsoft stuff all day. I nearly said a different word that rhymed with grit then, but...
I did. I have been, yes. Showcasing links for a whole load of people and doing some SharePoint research this afternoon. And that after doing some big WordPress stuff earlier in the week. So.
And I finished off the week with some big words.
Yes.
Discombobulate.
Doing some exciting things on the Bagel Tech for the Bagel Tech website as well.
Ooh, can't wait.
Yeah.
Eric, how are you doing, sir?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Yeah, all right. America is agreeing with you, I take it. The West
Coast. Yeah. Good weather today and good light, as you can see, come flooding into my windows, making it so I don't need to have any kind of lights turned on. So, yeah.
Are you popping to Macworld?
I did last year. It's only like $30 and it's, you know, about a 2-hour drive, but I just came away with nothing interesting last year, I have to say.
Well, isn't that like a CES thing? So actually you'll probably get something interesting this year.
Wait, what?
Well, direct CES is every 2 years that it's worth going, so... Go this year to Macworld, it might be worth it. There you go. Paul Kent says it's a good show. I know he'd say that anyway, but it's got iWorld with it now, hasn't it? Macworld, iWorld.
Yeah, they're phasing out the Macs, clearly, as I suspect Apple is doing.
That's not what he means, I don't think. And last but by no means least, Mr. Christopher Woods.
Hello.
Back to
talk. You made the foolish mistake of inviting me back.
Well, no, you did very well last week, mate. Last minute. I thought you were excellent. Unprepped, and you still carried it off beautifully.
Yes,
I excel when I have
a conversation.
Season pro.
Absolutely. But you're back here to talk about copyright things again for this week, because there's been a couple of stuff that's quite interesting.
Lovely.
You know lots about it. The week in technology, we've had a pile of stuff go off. Most of it's been privacy related. EU says you've got the right to shrink away into the distance and become the French Foreign Legion of Data. They've also said that they've got to take all of your electronic stuff back and recycle it at the manufacturers or the stores as well, which is an interesting story. And the Xbox 720 says that Microsoft have confirmed that you won't be playing rental games on it or used games on it, which is pretty bad. And Lazaridis and Belzili have been told to sling their rook, but they're still on the board from what I understand, and the new bloke doesn't look like he's old enough to shave yet. Mate, you want to buy a
good
BlackBerry?
Good old Rim. Every decision's a good one.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
Should we start with the Google thing? Because Google changed its privacy policy this week. It sent an email out yesterday, was it? This morning? Yesterday?
I got the email this morning, but the announcement was posted yesterday.
Yeah, they're saying that policy has been changed to support data sharing. And there's three key areas. Ease of work with Google. They were saying about... I've read the same thing three times there. That's not worked. Anyway, the thrust of it, they're saying, is that it's supporting sharing of data amongst cross-product data usage. There we go.
I think the whole thing's bloody terrifying, to be honest. I looked at my latitude history for the first time yesterday. It has tracked my travel for the last God knows how long, and I can see graphs of where I've been. And of course, having had that gone into Google, I've got no idea who they're sharing it with. You last took a flight in July last year. We've seen you travel. We've seen you at Manchester Piccadilly Station. Go, bloody hell, they're following me.
So where's this come up then?
If you go to latitude, the dashboard of your latitude, you see pie charts. This is the amount of time you spend at home. This is the amount they've discovered where I work. I didn't type it in.
Just basis on how much time you've actually spent in one place, James.
It's crazy. Absolutely mental.
Well, I think at some point you must have opted in to latitude, right? I'm pretty sure that's an opt-in only.
Yeah. If you use Gmaps on an Android or on an older Windows mobile phone.
I'm happy you're opting in to latitude. But the amount of historical data and analysis which is going on of what I've done.
Yeah. You didn't really think you were going to get quite that much.
No. It's frightening. Have a look. If you're opting into that latitude, it's interesting but frightening.
Yeah, I actually saw some stuff on this and then thought, hey, that looks a bit of fun. I think I'll opt into it.
I'm trying to look.
So I knew what I was letting myself in for before I signed up for it.
They don't want to let me in. I haven't got the option.
I think we're a little bit off the track, seconds into the story, because what you're saying about latitude, really the story here is Google is just, they're not sharing your data, your private data with third parties differently than they used to. They're just sharing it between their own products and services, right?
I mean, we reported a week and a half, two weeks ago, that Google were going to share results from Google Plus with you in your search criteria.
It comes out in your Google search.
But it's an integration service. It's not if anyone types in James Hart, they're not getting your Google Plus stuff back. You're getting your Google Plus stuff back in your search because it applies to the search.
And I would say Eric, that yes, you're absolutely right. It's a little bit off track. But when you have geographic-specific data associated with you and that stuff is being, without you even knowing about it, being included in your results, it's quite weird. It's just weird.
Are you really that bothered, though?
That's the view I took with it.
One question I have is I haven't seen anything that specifically addressed the contents of your Gmail. The contents of your email as stored in Gmail, just as how Gmail advertisements are displayed next to your email messages.
Related, yeah.
Right. Will they be using the content of the content of those messages to display ads in YouTube, in the greater Google search, in Plus? Because first of all, are they? I don't think they are. They haven't said anything about that. Have you heard anything about that? And even if the answer is yes, I'm having a hard time finding a problem with that. Hmm. Seems like it might just be a good thing.
Yeah,
well,
I mean,
if you consider...
Go on, James.
All I was going to say was, if you consider all the other different ways of communicating that Google have ultimately failed with, all they've really got left is Google Mail, really, haven't they? And Plus.
I mean, it's basically it's the Facebookification of Google. They're just integrating all their distant, you know, disparate properties into a single umbrella, like Facebook services are.
I mean, the one thing that you got to applaud them for is the fact that they're taking 60 policies that they've got written across the entire organization and shrinking them down into one that should be easy to read, that you'll be able to understand. I don't get that impression, though, James.
Fair enough. I haven't read it.
Too long. Oh, yeah, why bother prepping for the story?
Well, I took a look at it.
I'm
and
just
going to
say it'd be fun.
I took a look at it yesterday when the story first came out, and I have to say that I think a lot of the people's privacy fears seem to be unfounded, because it's the Google's already had this stuff. Whether or not it shares your Google Maps data with your Google local data, with your Google Docs data, as long as it's no more accessible to third parties than it was before this policy change, what does it matter to the end user?
Yeah, that's why I'm not bothered about it. I mean, you know, it's kind of like, well, I'd be concerned if they would start going to offering it, but internally between things, I think I can only see benefits from that.
Mm. Yeah, it's like being upset because the accounting department of your insurance company is sharing your data with the marketing department or something. I don't know. I mean, it's the same.
Oh,
company.
Mate. I mean, that is nth degree. Last year, I told someone to piss off because, you know, I'd got a phone call every week for 3 years saying, you know, have you had an accident? You do realize you could be entitled to compensation. I'm like, wow, you know, piss off. I've had enough of this. Get stuffed. And then I get a death threat, you know, and it's some burk up in Manchester.
You encounter so many companies where the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. And I guess this is Google's attempt to prevent that.
Could be.
I shouldn't have said marketing, because that was the worst possible example of a department. Because that's the one thing that they are going to send you stuff. I don't want them sharing with marketing, but any other department, yeah.
Yeah.
Fifth floor to the third floor. Share it there.
Well, what this is doing is formalizing everything that they've been doing for the past 18 months. And I think what people are concerned by is the fact that they didn't realize this was happening in the first place. Because as you've said, Google knows all this about you. They already disclose this information probably quite freely on Facebook. What it is going to mean, though, and this is in their own FAQ, is that users will get better search results, ads, and other content when they're using Google services, and a more consistent user experience. And they cite examples like Google will be able to tell you that you'll be late for a meeting based on your location, your calendar, and the local traffic conditions, and things like more accurate spelling suggestions. So it's building up a profile of your usage, what you search for, the context of what you search for.
I tell you what, the one thing that concerns me over manipulating search is when they start prioritizing Google Plus over things like Twitter and things like that in my search. That was exactly the point I was going to make, in the fact that's trying. That's what I'm going to start to get irritated by it.
Yeah, they're not very good at implementing new specific products. What they are very good at is munging the data together, and what they're trying to do is lock people into the Google ecosystem. What they possibly are, I mean, I guess it's in some respect speculation, but you can understand why they'd want to do it, is to say, trust all the other products of Google, because we know, you know, and almost, it's almost, as you say, Eric, the opposite of, it's Googlification of the results.
You know, I've been thinking about that whole Twitter integration or lack thereof. There's, you know, the Google Plus integration, when you search for something now, it'll show results from Google's own search network. Social network, rather, in priority compared to Twitter, compared to Facebook, because they don't allow them in. You know, it's not free. They would have to pay. Facebook says no to everybody. Twitter used to allow it. Then
yeah, it's really weird, possibly, wasn't it? Stopped.
Yeah, then they possibly asked for more money, or we don't know what happened. They said negotiations broke down. So I'm a little confused on this, or I'm not really sure what to think. I'm not really sure if this is antitrust or if this is anti-competitive, if it's not a free thing. If Twitter were available, if the fire hose of Twitter were made available for free and they just chose not to put that in, I could kind of see that. But the fact that it's a rather expensive service that they chose not to license under contract from them seems like, can we really force them, or can a government force them to pay X millions of dollars for a Twitter license?
Well, what you'll end up with is basically just like a static page. You won't get real-time updates. It'll just be the bare minimum, what they need to do just to comply with the laws. This is ultimately a power play, as I can see it, because you've got an ever-growing Android user base. They don't care who makes the phones. They're going up against Apple. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in a year's time.
Yeah, because people are saying that it's anti-competitive to put their results there, but you don't. But it's you don't see the results of other search or other. I keep saying search, other social networks, specifically Twitter and Facebook. But they cost money, and in Facebook's case, they say no entirely. They can't have it in there. So is it anti-competitive if it actually is a large chunk of cash they're choosing not to spend? And they're really are they telling Twitter that they can't make a rival search engine? It seems like they totally could, and vice versa.
A sort of a user-generated search engine. Chris, I just thought it was quite funny the point you were making about Android phones, because if there's any system which is less integrated, as in YouTube doesn't know what Latitude, doesn't know what Google, Android phones are bloody useless when it comes to getting everything to do the same thing. And that's going to continue to be the case, I think.
A company is, I think, as large as Google needs to build up inertia in order to get to where it's going. But you've seen the
momentum,
the homogenization of the interface and the homogenization of all the various bits and pieces. You've got the consistent UI now, and you know you've got your logo in the corner and all that kind of stuff. It's going to come to the phone. It has to.
Oh, we'll come back in a year's time, see if that's happened.
Yeah.
This may just be a start.
Yeah, could well be.
You know, given all the information they know about you, I mean, what better than having automatic push notifications that are tailored to you? And you don't even have to switch them on. They just appear.
That's scary. That's just scary.
The chat room's talking about Lycos and Yahoo. I think they're talking old school, kids.
Alta Vista.
Google's the future.
Web crawler.
Ian, just one quick thing on that. I hear people saying this about, you know, what could be, you know, as bad as, you know, things tailored specifically to you, but surely that's a good thing, because then that way, actually, when I'm having to watch an ad or see something on the right-hand side or a Google AdWord or whatever, at least it's likely to be something that I'm likely to be interested in.
I don't know. I think I'm just sick of being marketed on by the whole world now.
I agree with you generally, but if the more targeted and more accurate it is, the better that's going to be. Both for the
even if it's tailored, I still don't want to know. There's a new book out by your favourite author, or there's a new album out by my favourite band. I'm well enough linked with other stuff that they do that I'll know that there's a new book out by whoever, and there's the new YouTube albums out or whatever. You know, it's there, and I'll be aware of it. I don't really need it rammed down my neck every time I fire me mail up.
Yeah,
it's inevitable though.
Yeah, maybe, but surely if you accept the fact that you've got to have something marketed to you, surely it's better something that you might be interested in rather than some random stuff.
Well, I'm a little bit worried about the adverts.
I try and turn it off at every instance. Sorry.
I'm a little bit worried about the adverts on the right-hand side of Facebook mentioning divorce. What's my wife been saying to them? So it's damn nurses again.
It's that up to date.
Yeah. It sounds just patery as well.
This is an interesting point. This is the kind of thing that will allow Google to make even more money from their ad platform. And as we all aware. Yeah, even more money.
Finally. I mean, that's all this is ever about.
Yeah. The humans are the capital that power the tubes. And the problem with advertising at the moment is it's still reactive if you have your tracking cookies enabled. As Google builds this profile up, they will be able to proactively market to you based on what it knows you will like as opposed to what you visited.
Really interesting. Could you imagine if these social services started looking into like your various status updates, like the infrequency, like you used to communicate with your wife more often on the service than you stopped, and then like based on your activity, it started to intelligently offer like divorce lawyer services to you and stuff like that. Like it just sees that something's going south in your life and starts to like offer you things.
That's really horrible.
But the next
time, 12 PM, Skynet became aware.
Absolutely. Started sending everybody bottles of bourbon.
Yeah. But I mean, razor blade. James, you said yourself there, you've got records of you trotting across the globe. There's a ton of people that are using cycling applications and running applications to track and train with that are then uploaded to the net. And they just presume that Nike aren't going to do anything with that. But if you're talking about the worst case scenario, they sell all that data to someone because they want to know where you run, and then you can come around and stab you while you're running. But at the best case scenario, Nike now know where everywhere you go. They know how long a pair of trainers last. And then they link with Google. And Google then, in your ad stream, start putting in Nike trainer ads when you come time to buy new trainers, because these must be wearing out.
Crazy.
See, that's what this is about. I mean, I was talking to a guy the other day who was talking about programs that can go into your search engines that will tell the people where you hover, not where you click, where you hover, and they'll look at the choices that you make for hovering, because that mimics your hand going to products in shops, and they will see where you last hovered before you went to purchase, and then they'll see the primary zone for purchase, the primary zone for all sorts of things. Mate.
I've actually seen a tool like that, Ewan.
Right.
We've got something that we use at work, which enables, you know, like we have site analytics, I've seen this tool which actually shows you a map of where people actually, not just what links they clicked on and which links they clicked on, but actually whereabouts exactly on the screen they were when they clicked on that link.
It's the next big thing.
Even down to the pixel, it shows you a map with all these little dots on the screen showing, overlaying the page, showing exactly where people actually clicked on. So yeah, I know, I've seen it.
Amazing.
What worries me is it's function creep. There'll come a time, you'll come out of your office at 5:30, you'll get your phone out, you'll turn it on to look at something, and you will have coffee houses marketing against each other for your business at that specific time.
Do you remember bluejacking?
Communications, that's already possible, isn't it?
But it'll just be pushed down through whatever G we're at the time. And to be honest, I'm not sure if I want to give up whatever dregs of personal privacy I have left in order to get a good deal on coffee. I'd rather pay full price.
I'd love to see an actual clinical psychological study about whether advertising is more annoying or less annoying, and you could substitute annoying for distracting when the ads are things you're interested in. Like, I'm wondering if you've ever been, I'm sure you've seen photos at least of Times Square in New York, and I mean it's the epitome of a distracting advertisements. Everything's a video billboard, left, right, up and down, all around you. Now it's a sea of just, you know, sensory overload. So I wonder if every billboard there somehow were displaying things that were relevant to your life, products, brands, activities that you have bought before that you're interested in, would you like that more or dislike that more? And similarly, when you're reading a web page and something, a video starts going, next to the article you're trying to focus on, if that's for something that you might want to buy instead of something that you couldn't care less about, do you like that more or are you even more annoyed by that? I think we'd have to test for that.
Surely, if you've got to have it, then it's better to have something that you're going to be interested in.
Well, I was going to say that the ability to avoid adverts, it's almost like we're chasing it. I mean, Beth was saying that there was a case in point. There was a track that was playing. So my dad sent me this piece of ambient electronic, and I'd never heard it before. And apparently, it's the soundtrack to an advert. And the reason I hadn't heard the advert is because I don't watch much television. But when I do, I skip through the adverts because they're irrelevant to me. And so it's more important for the companies to try and get your attention. And you think, as you say, Eric, if they can lay a honey trap and get your attention to something you're really interested in, that's about the only hope they have of making money out of you.
But it's the best form of advertising for the person that's actually receiving it, because it's more accurate and likely to be of more interest, and therefore is going to be more productive for the people that are actually advertising.
Well, I guess my problem is the thing I hate the most about modern web magazines and newspapers, blogs, etc., is that you're trying to read static text, not moving, and all around the edges and the perimeter, it's video playing with sound and graphics, and it's like, click me, click me, click me, and it's like, I just want to focus on the article I'm reading.
I agree with you, Eric, because I'm not saying that, you know, that the ads like Google AdWords and stuff, it's text, that's fine. You know, the whole of the right-hand side or the whole of the top, whatever. If it's text, that's fine. Then I might see it. But I agree that video, flashing GIF, animated GIFs and stuff, they are incredibly annoying and they just irritate the crap out of me. Sorry.
Right, James, I've just sent you a direct message.
Very good.
Here's the test.
I'm in what? I'm going
in
to
Twitter.
In Twitter?
Yeah.
Hang on a second. Are you sure?
Come on, tell us what it says.
Is it actually relevant?
There we go. No, it's not.
Ah!
This is an interesting question. Actually, whilst we're on the topic of ads, what do you do on Facebook? Because whenever I see a personalized ad, I never click on it because I don't want to know any more about me.
There's some talk in the chat room about that, and there are some people who click the uninteresting button. They don't think it does anything, and they're also they're finding that 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 it's just annoying. It's just an annoyance, those adverts being there, rather than sort of being attractive.
But if you click dislike, it does do something. It tells Facebook that you don't like that.
Oh, you should. There should be an I don't give a stuff button.
You said dislike. Our service said ding. No more about you.
We've acknowledged. Yeah, absolutely. That's scary.
Okay. Here's an interesting thing for you. Think about things like on Twitter, where they feed up, where they serve up people that you might like to follow, and you say, I'm not interested. It just serves you up another one.
Mm.
Is that the kind of thing you want to have, where you accept you're always going to have adverts and say, okay, right, well, you click rolling through them until you actually find one you're interested in, which is then going to give it even more intelligence about the kind of things you want to see?
I think the only difference there, though, is that they haven't already begun to leverage that for marketing. I use that. It's the only recommendation service I ever use on the web.
Yeah. See, I mean, it has
a genuine use.
What I've just done with James is I've had a troll through the internet trying to look for his home address because I don't actually know it. And all I know is he lives in Luton. And I finally got to an address, which I thought might be his, and I sent it to him, and it wasn't him.
Oh.
But there's a James Hart lives there who's going to get a Christmas card this year for me doing it, and I didn't show it on air.
I was hoping for a Valentine's card, to be honest. But
what's worrying is I've just gone to a website, 192.com, and there you go. I've typed in my name into 192.com, and if you subscribe with them, or if you just register with them, they will tell you where I live, because it's a matter of public record.
Yeah, it's the same thing with the BT
and the other occupants.
Yep, so there it is. Look, there's Ewan Rankin, age guide, 40 to 44. I won't be in that for much longer. other occupants, Sharon Rankin, electoral rolls, full list from 2002 to 2011. There you go.
But not only that, but correct me if I'm wrong, Ewan, but as I understand it, councils are allowed by law to sell a subset of the data.
They are.
To private companies.
That should be definitely outlawed.
For the benefit of all.
It annoys the hell out of me that it does it. They're so,
but this thing about, you know, Google are saying that there's no privacy change, full stop. So that's, you know, you're no less worse off, probably too many negatives there, than you were before you even started. So that's not an issue. Everything that you'd want to know about me, you could find very easily. I live a lot of stuff where I tell people anything. Like I said last week, you look at Woz goes walking his dog. I get a tweet that says he's walking his dog, and I know exactly where he is as well.
Mm.
And, you know, he's a billionaire, but or at least million. But, you know, what's the... I don't get...
I'll tell you another scary thing is the Amazon wish lists. Amazon wish lists are open to everybody. You get these people search websites, and one of the things that they said they'd match the name with is all the Amazon wish lists. And they include addresses sometimes.
Well, going back to your point, Eric, about how intrusive we think this personalised advertising is, Amazon's a good point. You go onto Amazon, it said, people who bought what you bought also looked at this, and we wondered if you'd like it as well. How much have you actually ever bought off that kind of proactive sales? Because I've bought a lot.
Oh, you have on Amazon? I find those rarely useful, partly because of Amazon's crazily screwed up inventory system where you get like 5 listings of the same product. Only one is sold through Amazon Prime, or the others are all sketchy and non-returnable, or they're out of stock, discontinued or something. So usually most of those I just don't even look at.
Well, sorry, Sarah, just saying there. So what you're saying is that they've come back with something which is correct that you're interested in, but it's just puerile when you actually get to try and buy it.
Yeah, kind
of. So it's made you click.
I don't know. There's more than
made you look.
No, I'd say there's more than one reason that I often don't click on them. Usually, it's like I don't know. I guess it's often too close to the thing that I actually searched for. If that makes sense. Like I'll search for a certain type of headphone, let's say, and then it'll say customers also bought, and it's like the same type of headphone, the 3 different listings for that same product. Like none of them is useful because I already searched for that.
Okay.
Can
Sarah,
I give
you can
a
say.
Really good example of this.
Yep.
Last week, I was looking around, looking on Amazon, and I was looking at NAS devices and things like that. Particular one that I was interested in that had 4 bays in it that you put 4 different drives in. Now, I didn't actually buy it in the end because of the fact that I actually managed to make a NAS up from what I've got here already. But I was seriously going to buy this NAS device. And one of the things that it also that Amazon also said, you know, people who bought this would be interested in was the drives that go in it. Now, because there was issues about compatibility, I was going to buy, okay, right, I'll have four of those drives as well. And I didn't even think about it. I just put straight away put those four drives in my basket because of the fact that I knew that anyone would have bought that, those drives would have been compatible. So sometimes it is really, really useful.
Mm. Mm. And actually, I find the comments on Amazon to be incredibly useful as well, except for the ones on the Paul Ross portrait, which are hilarious.
Check it out, Paul Ross canvas. I'll give an example of just something that, you know, I had to buy a replacement MagSafe adapter because the other one frayed out recently. And it was just a nightmare trying to find that on Amazon. You'd think the simplest thing to do would be to find an Apple 85-watt MagSafe power adapter. But there were like, for each of the three different wattages, 45, 65, and 85, there were like 3 to 5 different listings. Half of them were discontinued or through a really sketchy place that got 1-star reviews. Half of them said it was a real product, Apple branded, but then the reviews said it wasn't. Half of them then even said that it's a real Apple One. But basically, they started to give it 1-star reviews based not on the product, but on the store they bought it from, one of the 10, you know, no names that Amazon sells through in a way that I don't understand because I don't see how consumers would like that at all. And yet they do it.
Snap, Eric, I look for a MagSafe adapter and there is a million different versions and anything you look for, there is a million different versions on Amazon of certainly the same thing, but different. And you do get lost in the mire.
Hang on, certainly the same thing, but different.
Yeah, well,
one or the other, mate. Come on.
vaguely similar things.
It's how Apple can justify the massive cost of going into their store and buying because you know where it is. You know what it is.
And you know you're getting the right one. It's not
ridiculous.
Because like with the MagSafes, like literally, it took I like lost an hour before I realized that all the ones that didn't cost $79.99 are phonies, and so, half the reviews said they were fake. Half the reviews said they were fine. Half the reviews said they got their product on time, on schedule, and it was totally great. Half of them said it was a broken product from a no-name little, you know, cheap overseas company that they hate Amazon for it. They hate the company for it. And these were all grouped together. I see a similar thing even with some like DVDs. I'll look for a Blu-ray and the review is from the VHS version or something crazy like that. It's all just mixed around. I think they're hurting themselves in the way that they've not sorted some of those things out.
It's amusing because when they first started doing their recommendation engine stuff, I bought a book which was written by someone who researched it and visualized the whole thing. It was infographics, but years before anybody else was doing it. The Visual Everything has a video which basically demonstrates the same thing. But they then made massive inroads and became the de facto online store for books and then expanded outwards. But it was as they shoehorned in an eBay-like experience, the marketplace, that they couldn't really figure it out. And at the same time, they were making great strides and had the A9 thing, which they launched separately, but is kind of dovetailed back into Amazon now. But they're doing experiments with augmented reality, matching products and then, you know, using the recommendation and personalizing like that. But they struggled because of their inherently limited set of data. They couldn't get everything that Google has. But they could have been Google if they'd expanded outwards and, you know, diverged into other services, but they stuck where they were.
James?
What could have been?
You kept your win at Service Air very quiet.
Oh, that was a long time ago.
August the 5th, 2010, mate.
That's nearly 2 years ago, nearly.
James Hart of Luton said, as a regular user of London Luton Airport for business trips, I was delighted that my name was chosen and that I've been given such a useful prize.
They gave me a poster actually, funnily enough, this is I got a little pass for the executive lounge, so that if in case if your plane's delayed or you're waiting for your plane, you can go and have
worth £250
free coffee. Absolutely. But you can't take kids in there. So if I wanted to take the children in there, they'd have to stay outside looking through the window.
Yeah, but at least you can get a free packet of crisps to give them out the door while they're stood waiting in the corridor.
Michael, you might consider it a small relief.
That was quite amusing. What they didn't realise is that I use Luton Airport to catch the cheap old coach down to London every day, but
right, on that very basis then, James, the EU has proposed a rule that says you have the right to be forgotten on the internet. There is absolutely
data, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no way you should be maintained in a state that you are not happy with. So that incident with the sheep, you can ask it to be removed. You can ask it to be tagged, detagged.
It was 5 pages in on Google.
At least. I mean, do you look on with envy, Eric, at the EU, or do you look on with horror?
I don't know.
You could be forgotten on the internet if you wanted to be.
Can you really, though? I think that's the problem. Is it ever even really possible?
Well, they're not talking about the fact that they're going to go out and do all the hunting down of where you are. What they're saying is, if you've got specific information that comes up on the net that you don't want to be on there, then you can ask for it to be removed, and you should have a right to be able to get it to remove. It's something at the Digital Life Design Conference in Munich. Vivian Redding, who's the Justice Commissioner, has said that it should be taken down over and above existing privacy settings. She's talking about the fact that it's things like students who do kinds of things that get put up, and they're a really, really good wheeze when they're there, but then they come back to haunt them later in life.
The problem is
you do should be forgotten.
Proving it's gone. It's gone. No, honestly, it's not there anymore. Yeah. No, we've taken it down.
I was going to say something today that made me think about this whole issue.
Go on.
I don't know if you're aware, but there was an issue on Twitter today with one of the MPs whose intern actually managed to get onto the MP's account and actually said a couple of things they shouldn't have done. There's been a whole issue about it today. I'm not going to say which MP it was, because obviously I don't want to make a big deal out of it. But it was interesting the way that the MPs dealt with it. And there was a great blog post that he actually posted this evening, which actually said that he was asked why he hasn't deleted the offending tweets. And he said, well, what's the point? Because someone somewhere will probably do a screen print or whatever, and it'll end up getting passed around the net even more. So he was saying that once something's actually published, there's little point in retracting it because it's already public, and someone out there is always going to have that. Now, I know obviously in that particular case, that person is in the public eye, but that doesn't necessarily, when you delete something, you can't be, that was out there in the public eye, you can't be absolutely sure that it's definitely gone.
I mean, you should say the name of the MP there, because there's some serious kudos that an MP actually understands screen capture.
It was Tom Watson.
Mm. Yeah. He was one of the few MPs to argue against the DEA.
Absolutely. Did anyone else read his blog post this evening about that?
Good lad.
No, it'd be interesting to them.
Yeah. I'll see if I can find it.
Watson was gave the Murdochs good seeing to as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, yes. I know. Well, that was actually, the Times and the Sun were actually mentioned in terms of how they handled it.
Well, anyway, what I know, I have no idea what you guys were just talking about.
Did you get the list of the list of stories that I sent you?
Oh, no. I just meant about the MP and all, who those
but
people are.
But you understand
are
what I'm getting at.
MP is a member of Parliament.
Right.
Yeah.
A cool thing, he just fell over. My take on this is that it's perhaps not a slippery slope, but where do you draw the line? Because the person said in the article that no, this would not extend to requesting that a story about yourself be removed permanently from a major newspaper. Well, if that doesn't apply, and we agree that that should not apply, then what does this apply to? Just social networks like Facebook? If that's the case, then it should be dealt with on the Facebook level or on the network, the level of social networks.
And where does a blog sit in relation to all of that? Right. It's not a news article. It's not a news outlet story. It's not accepted as being, you know, journalistic in any sense.
Or like a news report, like you're caught, like you're just like walking in the background of a crowd, but you did something embarrassing and you're on the national news, or you got captured in a documentary on the street or something, and then you wanted to be removed out of that. Can you do that then? If it was like you were in public, but you didn't know, it seems like a very,
very
hard
willing.
Thing. Yeah. Yeah. I would be more in favor of something having to do with just telling the social networks, any place that hosts user generated content, that if they choose to remove it, you have to remove it. And there would be penalties if you don't actually remove it on the per the user's request. I think the big difference has to be, did the user upload that himself, or did someone else publish that about the person? And then if it is your own, then you could even do it on the basis of, you could legislate on the basis of copyright. That's my photo, so I get to revoke Facebook's license, so they have to take it down. You know, that kind of thing.
Well, there's an interesting question as well in the chat room. There's a lot of people saying, so where's the jurisdiction? Where's the limitation of this? You know, if you talk about social networking sites, none of those really readily fall within EU jurisdictions, do they? So where would they actually have the teeth to enforce it anyway?
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean, because Facebook and Google and Twitter, they're all in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, they've got presences in Europe, but then they could bring pressure to bear, but they're really going to start an international incident over someone showing their ass on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube? I think so.
I think it wouldn't just be one incident that would cause an issue. It would be an attitude in terms of how it was dealt with in a particular jurisdiction.
Hmm. There you go. You can join the French Foreign Legion. Now, Ian, you put in FBI planned social network map alert mashup application. Do you want to talk us through this one?
Yeah, it's a BBC News article. I saw it. It's currently running headline on the tech page. It's some screen scraping thing that the FBI have decided. It's the FBI's Strategic Information Operations Center developing a social media application. The idea is it will screen scrape for alert words across Twitter, Facebook, Google Maps, everywhere, and then and pull them together in much the same way I think they use things now with audio from mobile phones. And
it's a conspiracy generator.
Yeah. Yes, and doesn't
that's
that
just going to drive it underground, isn't it?
I've said this a lot tonight, but doesn't that sound scary again?
Well, the
possible misconceptions you can make from pulling random words out and.
Well, people have already been jailed for less.
I'm going to bomb Robin Hood Airport.
There's your chap who was chuntering on Twitter and suddenly found himself in the dock because he was moaning about the airport.
Mm. Yeah.
But it's that's another new thing. I don't know one thinks of that, but.
Yeah, this is another one that I'm torn on. I don't really know, you know, I don't really have a decision to make on this. I don't really know yet. And that is, part of me thinks, well, if the data's public, if it's something that you put on the public internet, then why wouldn't you want the FBI to crawl it any more than you'd want Google or any person to crawl it? But then the other part of me says that, yeah, that might lead to some false arrests or some false hysteria. And the biggest problem is, what are you really accomplishing by giving them access to that? Because wouldn't any real terrorist be talking, I don't know, not on Twitter about their terrorist plot? I mean, maybe they're trying to hide it a little bit more than that.
They'll be wanting to use Streak Machine's internet alternative. I was going to say data is all very well. It's when it becomes information and that information gets turned into knowledge. There are so many steps at which that knowledge can be completely misaligned with reality because it's all to do with the interpretation of the data. And yes, they can apply as much wisdom and algorithms as they like to it, but all it'll take is one wrong arrest and the whole thing will collapse. I think, and somebody's life will be ruined.
I think what you'll do, I mean, if you listen to the radio chatter that you get off any kind of secret agency, if you could hear it at all, you'd find keywords that were repeated, and they were repeated in certain contexts that would be clear that they represented a person. So if you follow movies of the Secret Service and things like that, they'll talk about the code name for the president is Liberty. Liberty's moving. Well, at the point they say Liberty's moving, you know, if you're in that local area and you know that there's an event taking place, it's not going to be hard to work out what the word Liberty represents. And I think what they're saying here is if people apply code words to targets and that kind of stuff, the repetition of those code words out of context, in context, that kind of thing, will be a spike that pops up on a graph somewhere that means that they're going to find out how this person is thinking. And they won't know what the keyword necessarily relates to, but then that'll come from, again, the context of it, location of it, because someone will say, I'm next to K6, and K6 is then got a location on their tweet, and that's it.
But weeding out the rubbish is going to be so difficult.
Yeah, well, we pay a fortune for that, don't we? That's GCHQ.
Yep.
Yeah, like it or not, that's what they do. They weed out crap.
Spooks.
Mm.
And the Americans are over on British soil doing SIGINT.
They're doing what?
Yeah, they're just down the SIGINT. Road from me.
What's signals intelligence. It's the biggest weapon in any army's arsenal.
Mm.
Yeah, remember with Hell, just up the road from us.
In Buckinghamshire,
one of their biggest bases.
There's an RAF station, well, RAF base in Bucks, which the US run. If you go through the gates, it's US guards. The machines, vending machines are US dollars. You know, it's American Coke flown in.
Yeah.
And They don't fly anything out of there. They just have nice domes. They listen in, have downlinks for satellites.
When Ian said they were in a field near him, I got the impression they were camping. I have to say.
Just with a parabola.
Gumpsman with Hill are just outside of Harrogate. You will see some huge golf balls on the horizon.
Yeah.
There's which is, again, another US base on UK soil.
Portable chemical toilets. Mobile showers.
Right.
That drain into a basin. There you go. Quality stuff. Xbox 720p won't be playing used games, says a report. Microsoft's next generation Xbox will feature a system aimed at preventing owners playing used games, according to the Kotaku report. Reliable industry source.
Mm. And if you consider that their loyalty system is becoming discredited, in some respect, if you've got an old Xbox 360, get it, there'll be no point in getting a new one.
Has a Microsoft point dropped on the exchange rate down to the equivalent of a dollar yet?
Joke. That's the joke I prepared for this show.
I know. Thanks, mate.
A joke.
But it is true. You can pay £10 or it's 800 Microsoft points.
Bloody waste of time.
The Microsoft point will soon be aligned to the euro. and Greece will adopt it as their current currency.
You're funnier than me, Euron. I hate you.
It's the Microsoft bailout package.
Mitt Romney's going to start storing all of his cash in Microsoft points.
Yeah. And he'll get his Xbox 720 and go, damn you.
Okay, first of all, why are people calling it codename Xbox 720? The current Xbox 360 is 720p. From the baseline, in many cases, that goes up to some variant of 1080. It's like 1080 by, and then
you're too young to remember the Atari 720.
It should be Xbox 2K or 4K, shouldn't it?
Xbox or quite good.
I would call it as a code name. I'd call it Xbox 1080 because that would be the defining characteristic between the 360 and the next version up. It would be the presence of 1080p. You know, 1080p 60 4K. As opposed to 720.
Have you spent all afternoon thinking about this, Eric?
I saw something about this yesterday, which made me think about the... Dude, they call it 720.
Dude, I'm sorry, but all you've done there is establish that the real name of the Xbox 360's got sod all to do with the resolution. We knew that before we started.
Mm. Well, then why would they call it 720?
Because that's twice 360.
Yeah.
He's only just got that. Look at his face.
Well...
Oh yeah,
that penny has it dropped?
Three.
Yet?
Oh yeah. Oh man, yeah. That's it. The dots have joined. 720
well,
twice 360.
Well, they're calling the Wii HD. I guess I did assume it was going to be something about the resolution, because otherwise, why would you just name it after two circles? Gotcha.
What?
Google again, aren't I?
Oh, as in two rotations.
If you're going to make a 360. And you're going to make another 360 and add them together to make a really powerful 360 that's twice as powerful. Call it 720 because 360
is
360, 720.
You know
that, that's
why
kind
it's
of
called
it, I think.
You know why it's called 360 and not Xbox 2, right?
Because the red ring makes a full circle at the end, no?
That's clever,
I'm
but no.
Out of this.
Go on.
Because they didn't want to go head-to-head Xbox 2 against PlayStation 3. It
so
just sounded inferior.
Okay. Oh right, 2 versus 3. So why did they call it 360 though? That's why they didn't. That's why
Xbox 3 because they couldn't go on the second version of Xbox 3.
So I'm lost now because you're doing a good job here. I'm confused. I thought I'd got this.
Yeah.
So they didn't call it Xbox 2 because it was PlayStation 3, and they didn't want to have the inferior number. I get that. That's fine, but it doesn't explain why they called it 360.
Oh well, the excuse was it does your entire media landscape, plays your games, plays your films, you know, all that stuff. And it kind of does it now, but it didn't do it for years.
Yeah, I mean, why is it called Anderson Cooper 360? 360 is just kind of a buzzword, like 24/7.
Okay,
365 you're thinking of.
Well, yeah, I agree, but that kind of plays into it.
They wanted it to become your media center.
Ironically, it's just going to get bigger.
My prediction is they're going to either call it Xbox 1080, they're going to call it just Xbox, like as a platform, like no more second moniker, or they're going to call it Xbox and then some like Vista, you know, like a made-up adjective.
Oh, God. Oh, God, here we go. And then we're going to have four different versions of it, one which can't do wireless. And then
you're just going to go straight to Xbox 7.
One which has no aero. And then,
yeah,
oh
I was going to say, when are we converted? When are we going to start
converting? And then the floor is showing. And then the floor is showing. Well, if you graph the Kinect version with the with the Blade operating system, then you eventually get that this is the seventh version of Xbox. It's like, no, it's not.
Xbox 4, home premium.
V8. Yeah. V8.
It's going to be Xbox 8, along with Windows 8 and everything else.
Have you seen Xbox, the size of the graphics processor in it? That is a seriously hefty bit of kit.
Well, hang on, do be careful, because isn't it a bull? It's vaporware at the moment.
Well, there's a picture of it on the internet.
Well, there's already talk about the GPU that they're going to use, so...
There's rumors.
Yeah, there are analogous GPUs on the market currently. That would compete with on the specs. They're going to have probably a proprietary build and everything to make it cheap and mass market. But we can kind of look at the performance of existing cards and extrapolate out. I think it's cool that they're saying 6 times the graphics performance of the current Xbox, 6 times. That's like having 6 Xboxes strung together. That's going to be a major improvement.
Mm. Well, the 360's only got a custom triple-core power PC chip in it.
I was waiting for someone to bring up the word Pi in the chat room. That's happened. Xbox Infinity. And there's something about Radiance, and that's just getting a little bit too deep.
I was listening. Does anyone listen to Great Lives podcast on Radio 4? From Radio 4?
No.
They did Gracie Allen this week, and I listened to it this morning on the way to Manchester. There was a great bit in there where Gracie Allen is talking to a bloke, and he says he's learnt geometry or algebra or something like that. And she says, so go on then, speak some geometry. And he says, okay, pi r squared. She says, that's stupid. Everyone knows pi r round.
Oh, no.
Quality line. Quality line. this podcast and many others is totally down to UK2.net. They're a fantastic bunch of people. I'm trying to find what I'm supposed to say now.
You can do it, Ewan. You can do it.
I clicked off what they'd sent me. Do say this, won't you, Ewan? Well, I will if I can find it. There we go. We'd be lost without them. They really are incredible to us. They just pick up all our bandwidth. And I was sitting crapping myself that you know, we want to have a word with you, Ewan. Okay, come into the head office, bend over, boy. And all they've said is, no, we want you to change the line that you use at the start of the Daily Show to this. And could you push these 3 things, please? Because we think we're kind of proud of these. Really happy, thanks very much, mate. They're fantastic. They really look after us. You can get anything you like for the web, basically. You know, there's hosting, domain names, all of that kind of stuff. But specifically, one of the things that they've got at the moment is dedicated servers, and they're not that bad in terms of price. You can pay a fortune for a dedicated server with other providers, but UK2 is starting at £49 per month for a dedicated server that will give you a hell of a punch, and you can get up to 100 terabytes of data transfer per month, a 1 terabyte drive, and there's a whole pile of other specs that go along with it. And then there's a slider that you can move effectively. But the top level one that they get, which is like 100 terabytes of bandwidth. See, I haven't done this before. Hang on, let me stumble through it. Is £249 a month. And I had a look around today, and that's a really good price in comparison to what other services are providing for you. So do check them out. Please do also link to them on Facebook. They've got Facebook integration for all of their servers and websites as well. And for £2.95 a month, you get their fantastic site builder software that will help you put all the stuff together, and you won't need to pay a web admin to do it for you. And they're a vast sum of money, so it's well worth the money. Just go to uk2.net. Please go through our click through on bageltechnews.com. And even if you buy a service at £295 a month, you can still use the offer code bageltech and get 15% off that as well. As so, it stands up pretty well as price as it is. Take the discount off, and you're getting a whacking great discount, an enormous amount of money that you save. So, if you're in that market for dedicated servers, check them out, because it could be well worth the look. UK2, thanks so much to them for sponsoring us. Every single show requires its full existence down to UK2, so please keep supporting them, because you are, and they're really appreciative, and so am I. Have we got any cool things?
That's about 45 quid a month saving.
45 quid a month saving, there you go. Well worth it. Amazing. Well,
if you're running a small business, you need to keep every penny you can.
Well worth the money.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're all thinking now, see? Right. Sick note. What you got for us?
I've got something shiny. I love shiny things. I'll start off by saying that this year I'm trying not to buy too many gadgets. Just because, you know, trying austerity measures, running in the kind of
your wife's going to divorce you if you do.
Yes, exactly. So I can dream, I can window shop, and so far January I've been clean. Right, I can go, I can deal with this.
You've done very well as a drug addict, yes.
Absolutely, but there are some fantastic cufflinks on Amazon, where one has got a Wi-Fi interface for USB, and the other one is a 2 gig USB stick. And I think they are gorgeous and useful. So if you're at a dinner party, and no, I can't think of a use for them. But what the hell? They're gorgeous.
Does the typing turn into an underwater car?
Yeah, wouldn't I was going to say, we should have the James Bond theme introducing this.
Oh, the typing must have LEDs on it or something.
Oh, wow. Fantastic.
But yes, I've put a link in the chat room, and I imagine the show notes, hopefully, will have the link in, and I'll be wearing them to work.
They surely will. Now, have you specified the price, though?
$250. That's a shiny amount of dollars, but as a Valentine's present for a loved one.
But I mean, the thing here is, mate, you're saying that you've done really well at not buying stuff off the net over the recent weeks. But when you fall off the wagon, dude, you really hit hard, don't you? I mean, that's not cheap.
If it's, yeah. I love shiny things.
Yeah, James, could you do me a favour here? I had to read through the link on this, and I couldn't understand what the Wi-Fi element was.
Wi-Fi hotspot.
But where from?
You'd probably get it from your existing computer, won't you? Does it take a SIM card?
Oh, I don't know. No, I think it just is. You plug it into your computer. If your computer's connected to the internet.
Oh, right. And it's a Bluetoothy dongle, but it's Wi-Fi.
Yeah. It's a repeater.
Oh, mini cool. Repeater. So if you need a Wi-Fi hotspot, you just take it off your cufflink, plug it in your laptop.
Laptop, and you can use it. Everybody can have a go on it.
That is very James Bond-like.
Thanks to DT in the chat room for typing something I really cannot read out. However,
connected at all times.
I have to admit. I have to admit that the ring shape of that would probably be good for a Wi-Fi signal.
Yeah, it would actually. Yeah.
As an antenna.
Just the right amount of, twisted dipole. Right, should we move on?
Very good pick, mate. Very good pick. Ian, what have you got for us, mate?
I've got a bit of software. I've just put a link in the chat room called Serve.io, if that's how you say it. It's a free media server you run on your Windows PC or sort of linking back to a pick from a couple of three weeks ago when I was last on my little free NAS NAS server on my HP netbook. It basically will transcode any media in a folder you point it at to your devices around the house, particularly sort of my ever fickle Sony PlayStation, although only play certain media formats. No matter what you've ripped your CD, your DVD or whatever into, it will busily transcode it into a format your PlayStation likes. Even recommended by Sony, so it's a neat little app, runs on any platform because it's Java-based.
Jolly good. Excellent. Did you say a price, or did you say it's free?
Free. Tommy Tight Arse, free.
Good lad. No, we like tight, it's okay. Excellent.
Contributing computing.
Sarah, you have a pass of the week.
Yes, I do. Something that's been irritating I'm not going to say that word again because I've already said it once.
But Jesus.
Yes, that's the one out of me over the last few weeks. And I know you've tweeted about it, Ewan. That's TweetDeck. I don't know what Twitter have done with it, but they've trashed it, basically. And it's gone from being a fantastic tool to being... it's given me so many grief. It's tweets it said it's posted when it hasn't done and other all sorts of things happened. And I'm just disgusted with what they've done with it. I don't know. They're obviously trying to kill it, but... They've really missed a trick here, and I'm really annoyed about it because of the number of, particularly when I discovered the number of tweets it hadn't posted that it said it had.
Well, the thing was you had with TweetDeck was that not only did it deal with multiple accounts really well, but you had instant posting to multiple accounts from TweetDeck.
Yeah.
And it was absolutely brilliant. And the new one is just it's a dog. It's an absolute dog. I got collared by it, unfortunately, because my laptop went down last week with the SSD that Ian Grant recommended failed. Not that I'm holding a grudge. I had to put the new one on. I couldn't even put the old one on. I've got the old one on this computer here, and that is going nowhere, I'm telling you. But the new one is just a bag of hurt. Mm. It is awful.
Yeah, I mean, I've actually completely stopped using it now.
Yeah, I've gone on to... I've actually used the Twitter application this week because I've got no choice, and it's the best of a bad bunch, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
I think I had the air file for 38.2, so I'll dig it out.
Oh, good man, good man.
Yeah, the one thing that irritates me with the... I mean, I generally like the Twitter website use API and the Twitter app on my next Sessi Android app. But the one thing that slightly irritates me is on the web app that you can't, when you go to retweet, you can't edit it before you actually retweet it. You can on the mobile app, but you can't on the...
Oh, right, yeah. An option to do a quote rather than a retweet.
Quote, exactly. Retweet, yeah.
And that's missing from the web app, which is a bit irritating. But other than that, it's so much better. But as Ewan says, it's you can't do the... Unfortunately, you can't really do the multiple account tweeting at the same time, which is slightly irritating. But I can live without that. Yeah, I just got really annoyed with that TweetDeck, so... That's why I've left my cool thingy that I was going to do for next week because I wanted to talk about this.
Mm. It's bad. It's really bad.
It is. It's a
pile. Terrible.
Eric, do you want a drum roll?
Sure, because I have an actual cool thingy. So, let's see. Long story short, I guess, because you'll know if you need these or not. This is the first of its kind that I've found, and I think that they're brand new. At least Amazon said they were brand new, and I've searched for these over the years, couldn't find anything even remotely like this. These are wired headphones from Polk Audio. They are the UltraFit, the Polk Audio UltraFit 2000 sports headphone. They are an over-the-ear headphone, but unlike anything else of that type, they have an iPhone inline microphone. See, that dangles right there. So it's actually a hands-free device, a wired hands-free device. So it's not Bluetooth and it requires no battery. It also has on the side a pause, play pause, which also works for answer and end the call. And then you've got volume up and volume down, which can also work as track forward, track backward, depending on how you do something. I don't know. But the microphone there and it being a wired device is the reason that I got these. Also, they fit snugly, and they're great for exercise. I use them to go running. Mm-hmm. They sound much better than these little things that they replaced. I got these Sonys. They're cheaper, but I got them like a couple of months ago. They're so bad. They clip onto your ear. I called Amazon, said, I don't like them. I want to return them. They said, just keep them. So that's the only reason I have these. And they already shorted out. Even Amazon didn't want them back. They already died. That's why I had to buy a new pair. And so I found these Polk UltraFit 2000. If you don't like the in-ear buds, and that's... I don't like those. They never fit me right. They're always uncomfortable. So I have to have over the ear. And then I also don't like Bluetooth. I hate having the connection. I hate having to charge it. I hate not having the voice in both ears. So for me and other freaks like me, this headset is going to be very useful.
Mm, good man. Price?
I think it's like $70. Way more than I wanted to spend. Cause this,
yeah.
Yeah, the Sonys they're replacing were like 20 or 30 because they're mostly, I use them for exercise. But considering I don't actually have a hands-free and what I've been doing for like the last 2 years, is I plug in a pair of regular headphones and then I just like hold up the phone like this so you can hear me and talking to the microphone. So I need a hands-free. So for me, that combined a hands-free with the running headphones. So for me, that was actually a good
deal. It's not that bad. I mean, I bought some hands-free earphones for use in the car with a wired through and with an in-ear thing, and they were £40 on the Sony ones. They were pretty good.
Yeah,
but they're not as good for, they're no good for exercise and stuff. Mm-hmm. Not that
yeah,
I
yeah,
know.
Bluetooth is expensive, and of course, having the wire and having it not be the little earbuds, but rather the over-the-ear clip-ons is hard to find.
Yeah, excellent. The only thing I would say, Eric, is that they look a little bit flimsy for exercise.
Not really.
Okay.
They fit snugly, and they actually come with like four sets of ear pads. I don't really know why. It's like for light or moderate exercise. I don't know why that would adjust my ear pad accordingly. But no, they fit snugger, more snugly than any Sony pair I've used.
Jogger's lobe.
Yeah.
That's what it would be.
I thought the cool headphones were the really massive ones you get that almost take up your whole head.
Well, like these?
Like the ones we're wearing, yes.
Even bigger than that.
I can't believe people that are walking through the underground and on the trains and stuff, and they've got these blue and great big headphones.
Why do people do that?
Oh, the Beats ones. God. Yeah.
Don't get me started on Beats.
Okay.
I've had one set for his birthday.
Have you not purchased your set of Sennheiser reference headphones yet at £1,800?
Want?
No. You haven't bought those yet.
Purchase the headband for them.
the replacement
the
phone.
Case.
I'm wearing it right now.
The
earphones I'm using right now are Sennheiser.
Yeah, but they're 20 quid and they come from HMV.
They weren't 20 quid.
I was joking.
A bit more expensive, but they are good.
Woodsy, have you got a pick for us?
I do, yeah. We've gone on a bit of an audio geek vibe. Eric's headphones are interesting. He said they were the first that he'd seen which have the inline mic. They probably are, in fact, because the only other ones I've seen were ones I saw at Showstoppers. I wasn't there personally, unfortunately, but I saw some video and they had a guy doing parkour with in-ears. That's a company called Urbuds. And they demonstrated them. You twist them in. And the guy who was trying them had really odd ear canals. And apparently they fit. And to test it, they hung an iPod off the headphones to prove how well they fitted. But my pick...
If you can see the nozzle coming out the other side, you pushed it in too far.
Yeah, there's a retaining bolt.
My pick is this little beaut. And it's a portable headphone amp. I have got HD650s. I'm wearing them right now. It's why I look so stupid, but they're beautiful headphones. They're so comfortable. But when you've got an MP3 player, these are really, they're a ludicrous amount of impedance. So you get a headphone amp. It takes the load off your poor little MP3 player and saves your battery. This thing is great. It's about 49 quid at the moment. When it came out, it was about 75. It's got 1,050 milliamp hour battery. It's got a lovely OLED display. It just does what it says on the tin. But as well as that, it's got two headphone outs and it's got a DAC built into it. So you can plug it into your laptop with its horrible inbuilt sound card and get lovely, untouched, pristine audio out. It's only 3.5 mil out, but it's cool because you can listen on headphones and plug into a hi-fi if you've got a netbook or an ultrabook or, you know, anything without a decent sound card in. It's just great and it just works. No drivers, just works.
You've got an audiophile in James as well, who's going to be very impressed with that.
I was just going to add that we've got some DJs at Radio 2 who they absolutely need headphone amplifiers because the levels coming in, they are so deaf with years of having their volume turned up too loud that they have to have these high gain amplifiers to be able to hear anything that's going on. So, you know, Chris, it's a slippery slope to ultimate deafness and bigger amplifiers, I'm afraid.
Well, absolutely, yeah. And when I get them, my next cool pick will be something, again, audio-related, but something that makes it quieter. But this thing's cool. It comes with loads of accessories as well. You get...
Shouting,
well, you
shut up! Makes everything
be
quiet,
I'm talking! But it comes with, I guess you could think it was maybe something going around your wrist, but in fact, it's for tying stuff together. And it's a bit of a stretch, but it works with this. And it also comes with a silicone case, and it comes with a velvet case. And it comes with a little attacher so you can plug it in. And it comes with a nice USB cable with ferrite cores around it. You know, it's great. You know, for what you get, it's really cool. And it's anodized brushed aluminium. It just feels like a really nice unit.
I was quite happy with the price at 49 quid. So if it gets all that as well.
It got 10 out of 10 on trusted reviews. So there you go. And it's really lightweight as well. You just forget that you've got it. I mean, it looks ridiculous. It really does. This looks ridiculous to begin with. It's an H340 by iRiver.
Since we apparently have some headphone fans on the panel today, have you either of you guys found a thing that uses Dolby headphone, that 3D, you know, replicator virtual headphone in a little inline third-party device like that?
The wonderful world of psychoacoustics.
Yeah, because, you know, first time I tried Dolby headphone, it was like 2005. It was in the old version of Power DVD. It was built in, and when that was my DVD player for a while... I started even playing music through that because I was like, oh my God, it blew me away at how much better and more pleasant it was to listen to music in headphones through that.
It's like the moment you discovered SRS True Sound in Windows Media Player and you were like, oh my God.
Soundstage.
Well, I'm on the Mac, so I don't have that, but I've been trying to find something since then and I've never found anything that compared sonically to Dolby headphone in the quality of making, you know, that virtual stage. When I've heard SRS versions, I've heard other kinds, and they kind of just seem fake. But Dolby headphones seems to me like one of the greatest audio inventions that was never marketed and therefore no one owns. Like no one, they put it into no products. You can't buy it and put it into something. That I, one time 2 years ago, I found like this little thing made by JVC in Japan only. It was like you play, it was like what you just showed, Chris, but it was it had Dolby headphone in it. And you plug it in. It wasn't $49. It was like $100. Mm. But it was going to do real Dolby headphone. They tried to buy it from B&H and they said, oh, they've been discontinued. I'm like, shoot. Because then there was nothing like that in the world, which strikes me as odd because it sounds fantastic.
Huh. On a related note, you might not know this, but Bose, renowned for their waveguide technology, also have an interesting R&D department. And a few years ago, videos surfaced of a suspension system for cars, which pretty much canceled out any motion. This thing was going over test tracks. The wheels are going up and down like crazy, like kids on a bouncy castle. The car, solid as a rock. They've never marketed it.
Because people really want a bouncy ride.
They want to be able to feel what the car sounds like. They really get a lot of, yeah, if you're in a car, you need to feel the car. Otherwise, it's too scary.
You need to feel the road a bit.
But can you imagine, though, for farm vehicles or people 4x4s who just want a smooth ride over rough terrain? It blew my mind when I watched the video, and I've never, ever seen it in a car.
For those that are interested in your audio, we're going to bring back the BagelTech Sound podcast, and I think Chris is going to bring it. And I think you've just got yourself two panellists, mate.
I'm bringing the noise.
You're bringing the noise to the sound
bringing
podcast.
Bringing the noise reduction.
And I think you found... Eric and Sicknow are dead in for that.
Bringing EU noise protection level.
Why don't any cars, like car manufacturers, I don't know, maybe BMW, Mercedes, maybe those guys do it. How come no cars have, noise cancellation? Like they don't blast through like an inverse bass wave to cancel out the loud booming road noise that causes people to go deaf because they have to turn the music up too loud?
They do lose a lot of white noise technology though.
Mm. Yeah. They do. The engine cowling is amazing technology. They've already practically removed the sound of the engine from the car. But they have to have a little bit of that left so you can actually tell your engine's on.
Mm. There's a lot of white noise technology in cars. I know that for a fact.
Meaning what? That it actually silences mechanically or that it's literally like auditory noise cancellation through the speakers?
It depends. Some of it's emitted noise. Some of it's reflected noise. Some of it's counterpoint noise so that they'll put something that makes exactly the same tone in an opposing position. Loads. Mm.
By the way, Chris, you may like to know there's a newer model of that headphone amplifier, the E11. I'm just looking at it on Amazon. Yeah, it's slightly cheaper as well.
The word you're looking for, Chris, is bitch.
The E11 is the dock for the E7.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Oh, right, okay.
I bow to your greater judgment on this.
That's why it's cheaper then.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I have to say, Chris, I'm surprised that your iRiver's still going. My one's dead in a cupboard somewhere.
Well, I've got the old one as well, which has got IHP 140 on it. That's how old it is. I got a second one after I dropped the first one, and this was a replacement. Chris, got a colour screen, Chris, but I'm running Rockbox.
Chris.
Oh, we've got
Chris.
Yes.
I've just looked at this, and I don't think it is a dock. I think it's the thing. It doesn't say it's a dock. It says it's the thing. Sarah might be right there.
Well, the 11. It says it's portable headphone amplifier, yeah.
Yeah, and it looks like it's got... it doesn't look like a dock at all. Looks like the McCoy, mate.
Oh, this thing. Oh, yeah. My mistake. But,
and it's a fiver cheaper.
Sorry, I wasn't trying to be a bitch.
But I don't think it has a DAC in.
It doesn't say DAC, yeah.
No, good man. Right, okay.
It's got a gain switch.
I've got a pass of the week and a cool thing as well. As my pass of the week is EV. I was suckered in on Monday when it all came out. EV's there. It's the rival to Siri. You can run it on your existing phone. My iPhone 4 is still looking for a Thai restaurant near Heathrow. And I'm not kidding you. If I start... EV, the little thing, does a little kind of wobble with its one eye. And it to let you know it's doing something, okay. And here's the wobble on my one eye. See, it's still wobbling.
That sounds very rude.
Look at that, still looking. It's been looking since Monday, and it's not found anything. There you go, Evie. Don't buy it. It's free anyway. It was 69p now, actually. I think it wasn't free, but don't buy it. It's a waste of money. Absolute crap. What is worth getting? Because it's free, is Janitor. And Janitor, JANETTER, is a Twitter application which is TweetDeck like. It's not TweetDeck. There's the problem. But it's as close as you're going to get to TweetDeck without multiple single postings.
Ooh.
They don't do multiple single postings, unfortunately. You can only do it from one account at a time, but it does let you cut and paste onto it. It lets you choose the background of how it looks in the columns, just like TweetDeck, but you can pick unique colours for it. And I wrote to them and said, I'm really impressed with it, really like it. Can I do multiple posting? They said, no, we don't do that at the moment. We've got no plans to do that. But we'll feed that back to the dev team. And then I said, can I make it so that I can color code each of the columns by myself so that I can see one account, three columns of timeline mentions, DMs, and then I can color the next three different colours. And they said, no, you can only pick one at the moment. However, you can fully open it up and it's only HTML. So if you can write HTML, you can uniquely identify every single column by your own colour coding.
All right.
So, Sarah.
I was going to say, that sounds one for me.
It's available for Mac and XP and Vista and Windows 7.
Yeah, I've tried it on my machine at work and it's pretty good. I'm quite impressed.
It does work. It's very good. Yeah. It runs very, very quickly. And I got the correct version of TweetBot this week as well from after Carl came up last week.
That is a great app. I really like TweetBot.
Well, the one I bought wasn't. Because I bought the wrong one. They got $2.99 out of me for something that I have no idea how to use. But TweetBot came out and was very, very good. Very impressed with that.
Well, there's two for me to try there. Using it. Do we know whether that one is available on Android?
What's really frustrating is TweetBot isn't available on Android yet. That's really frustrating.
Neither's Janitor. But it's really
Using Twicker on Android. Although I've heard that the TweetDeck on Android is still pretty much the best there is, which is a shame.
Mm. Yeah, TweetDeck's gone.
I'm reasonably happy with the Twitter app on Android. Well,
there's nothing but one-star reviews for the TweetDeck app on the Mac App Store at the moment, so hopefully they'll change it.
Lordy.
Might get a rollback if there's enough pressure. Join the petition.
Yeah.
Bring back the features.
Where can we get a hold of you, Sick Note? I won't call you this next week, don't worry.
SYZY, Syzygy on Twitter.
Good man, thank you. Glad you're well, mate. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Ian, where can we get you, pal?
I am on the usual place, TIOABOA on Twitter. Which is turn it off and back on again.
Cheers, pal. Sarah?
On the Twitters at Sarah Jane UK and also on Google Plus as well.
Eric?
EricLanigan.com and Twitter.com/EricLanigan, EricLanigan.
Tone wants to know if that's spelt sick, Z-G.
I'm never going to live it down, am I?
No, it's only going to last a couple of months. Don't worry. And finally, Chris, where can we get you, mate?
You can read all the boring stuff long form on chriswoods.co.uk, or you can find me on this website if you're watching the live show. You can flame me in 140 characters or less on @ChristopherW.
And you'll be here with the Nonsense Show Saturday evening.
Oh, yes.
As normal.
Yeah.
Very good, mate. We'll be back again next week with the big show as normal, Thursday night, 9:30. Come and join us.